Now is author of Empire of AI, Dreams and Nightmares, and Sam Altman's OpenAI. Tune in tomorrow on Democracy Now! When we speak with the British journalist Carol Cadwallader about how to survive the broligarchy. We've got three job openings, senior headline news producer, a director of audience, and a director of technology, all full-time here in New York. You can learn more at democracynow.org/jobs. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Wirth, Shireen Endura, Sam Alpoff, Tamari Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, diversity, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Come and meet those dancing feet. On the avenue I'm taking you to
42nd Street.
Hear the beat of dancing feet. It's the song I love, the melody of 42nd Street. Little nifties from the 50s, innocent and sweet. Sexy ladies from the 80s, who are indiscreet. They're side by side, they're glorified. Where the underworld can't meet the elite. Where the underworld can't meet the elite. 42nd Street.
And our guest today is going to talk about the power of a different medium, the performing arts. Michelle Falk is our guest. She's an associate professor in the theater department at Wagner College and an established Broadway veteran in her own right. Michelle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the first thing we kind of wanted to get into today, before we get into your life teaching and your life on Broadway and everything like that, how did you first fall into this path of, we were talking about the radio for us, how did you first fall into the path of the stage and the performing arts that was like, this is something I have to be involved in?
Well, ever since I was a young woman, I guess I should say, I grew up in a very rural community in Pennsylvania, out, way outside of Pittsburgh. And the arts were always such a haven for me. It was a great way to express myself, whether through dance and then later singing. And then even after that, sort of musical theater, putting all those elements together. And so I just I guess I just loved it too much to not do it. So I kept pursuing it all along the way. Lucky me.
Well, you're now a professor in school. So like, where did you originally go to study? Did you go to conservatory? What's the deal? How did you get from your rural community to New York?
I started out at a small liberal arts college in Pennsylvania, Allegheny College, because I, you know, you have to remember when I was going to college, and I was lucky to go to college, pursuing a degree in musical theater wasn't really a thing. There were only a couple of colleges in the country that actually had a BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. So it wasn't really a thing. So I went to a small liberal arts school for 2 years. And at the end of my sophomore year, which is very common in most colleges, where you have to declare a major, you know, I was in a panic because I had no idea what I was going to do. And I went to my dad, who was a dentist, and I said, "Dad, I have no idea. You know, I have to pick a major. I don't know." And he said, "Well, what do you love to do more than anything?" And I said, "Dad, well, I love to be on stage more than anything." And he said, which was really a gift, he said, "Well, then that's what you should do." It hadn't even dawned on me really until then. I mean, I'd taken lots of lessons and done a lot of theater and all of that, but it didn't really dawn on me that I could pursue it, that I could make my bliss, you know, my job. And so then I auditioned at a couple of schools again, you know, Carnegie Mellon and Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And I ended up choosing that program. And so I finished there in the mid 80s somewhere.
Now talk to us about finishing, because I'm a junior here, so I'm getting ready to go out the door and get to the real world and go to New York, media capital of the world. You wanted to go to New York, theater capital of the world. How does that happen? How do you make that switch?
Well, the crazy thing is I didn't, I think I was maybe just a bit of an idiot. And I just kind of went where the work presented itself for me. So when I graduated from college, I had a job offer to work in a nightclub at Disney World. So they had a Broadway review. And so I went there for a year. And then the woman who was running that show lived in California, in Los Angeles. And she said to me, "Well, I have work for you out here if you want to come out here." So even though I probably should have gone to New York earlier, was trained to go to New York, that's what I was supposed to do, of course, I didn't do that. So I went to Los Angeles and I lived out there for, I think, 6 or 8 years. But meanwhile, out there, kept getting theater projects that took me to New York. And finally, the second one, which was in the early 90s, which was crazy for you. That one, when I got that one, I thought, "Oh, well, maybe you should move, because all signs point to, you know, the East Coast and New York." And so, which is all to say, there's no one right way to do it. I mean, you read 1,000 interviews with great, great actors that we all love, you know, who don't follow one path. There isn't one right way to do it. So, you know, that's sort of comforting to know, you know, if you have a passion or something that you're excited about and it takes you kind of away from what you think you're supposed to do, follow it, see where it takes you. You can always come back.
See where the wind blows. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Crazy for You. Was that your debut on Broadway? Yeah.
No. My first Broadway show was a rather short-lived musical called Mail, M-A-I-L, written by the great Michael Rupert and Jerry Kolker. Yeah. And it started at the Pasadena Playhouse in California, which was how I got involved with it. And then it was a huge hit out there. And it was such a super fun, like just a really fun piece. And then we went to the Kennedy Center for the summer. And then we moved into Broadway. And it was the same season. I only remember this because I saw both pieces a million times. The same season that Chess was on Broadway and Into the Woods, I think. So maybe like 1987, maybe something like that.
Because you were mentioning before about following your passion, following your bliss, what your father had said to you that very first night that you're on like a Broadway stage performing and doing the curtain call and everything. What's that feel like?
That feels like one of those, okay, pinch yourself for just a second. And I've been really lucky over the course of a very long and fruitful career to have a lot of moments, a lot of moments where I was so grateful to be in the room and so grateful to be collaborating with the people that I was either on stage with or had been on the production team. And I am now a little better at saying, okay, just like take a moment for yourself to kind of realize how special this is and how lucky you are that you get to do what you love to do and you get to share your gift. I've always felt really honored to be able to do that.
And you've got to do it a couple times. I'm reading, I'm rattling off the credits now. You're in the production of Cabaret, Seussical. You did Crazy for You, as you were mentioning, Hairspray, Mamma Mia. Now, the other thing that I want to mention is we can get more into this when we talk about your teaching career. You did a play called Hollywood Arms many, many years ago in the early 2000s. And because you were talking about your dreams and following your bliss and being happy and things of that nature. But I think for, especially for your students, which we'll get more into later, you got to win the Tony Award for that play. What we see, we see all these shows on television, Grammys, Oscars, Emmys, Tonys, things of that nature. What's it like being nominated, first of all, getting to go, and then getting to win? That's got to be such a, you were saying about that high feeling. That's got to be such, is that the highlight of your professional career? Like, what does that feel like?
Well, that's so. I mean, it's a kind of you to say. I tell you what's really honest. You know, everybody says it who gets nominated, but it's actually really true. It is really an honor to be recognized by your community for work that you had done in any particular season. And when I zoom out a little bit and you know, look at the women whose company I was surrounded by. That is an honor, you know, to be, you know, spoken of with the same revere that Christine Ebersole or Marion Seldes. And so all of the women in that category, I was just honored to be included. And I really mean that. Plus, every single one of us in that particular category that year, which I think might be unusual, all of our shows had closed. So it wasn't like anybody was coming to see us after we all got nominated. We all got nominated and our shows closed for various reasons. Some of the shows were supposed to close. Mine was certainly not supposed to close, but it did. You know, and then you fast forward, you know, to the actual award show. And I don't say this lightly, but my husband was also nominated that same season for work that he had done in a revival of Gypsy that he was Herbie with Bernadette Peters. And he was also nominated. So no kidding. I mean, to be sitting in that room surrounded by, you know, people that you have worshipped for years and years and, you know, in that room. And then to realize that you were also in that company, it was really an honor. You know, and then to win was like, it just was surreal. The whole thing was surreal. I was very certain I wasn't going to win.
That was going to be my next question. Did you think you were going to win? And then
No.
not at all? Who do you think?
No. No, why would I? I mean, every woman in that category, I mean, had done such. And that is such incredible work, right? And that's the thing to kind of remember, you know, these award shows. And look, I'm really grateful and really honored, and thrilled that I, you know, have the trophy over there on the shelf. But you also have to kind of remember that that even when you're working and you're doing great, noticeable, honorable work, award-winning work, it doesn't always, you don't always get recognized. And you have to kind of remember that it doesn't make the work any less special because you didn't get nominated for an award and or win an award. And that I've always, that sort of put that all in perspective for me. I think I was really lucky. And not to say that I don't feel good about what I did, but I think I was really lucky in that particular moment that whoever came to the show and were the shows that were voting, you know, that my performance tipped the scales in any way, because any one of us in that category deserved to win, to be honest.
Did you forget to thank anybody when you got up there? That's another thing they ask a lot of people who win.
Yes, I forgot to thank Ariel Tepper, who was one of our producers and a just fabulous friend, who, and her name did not come out of my mouth. And I, you know, so regretted it. I know when I ran to the back, you do like a, there's a press room back there and everybody's firing questions. And that question comes out, did you forget anyone? I was like, yes, Ari Tepper. Because she was, you know, worked seamlessly with Hal Prince on the producerial end of it, and just was such a generous and guiding spirit in that whole process. That was a really blissful process. You know, Hal Prince is directing, Carol Burnett was, you know, writing and working and in the room every day, and you know, the great Linda Lavin and, you know, Frank Wood and Donna Lynn Champion. It was really, you know, that was a joy to go to work every day. I get to play with, you know, all people that were better than me every day. It was an honor.
I was going to ask you, because Carol Burnett was one of the people who wrote the play Hollywood Arms that you won your Tony Award for. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, because all our lives, we've seen her on television and film and things of that nature. What's it like to actually work with her? And I was going to ask, how involved was she? But you seem to answer that question.
Well, to be honest, she co-wrote the play with her daughter, Carrie, based on kind of a memoir that Carol had written years prior, right? And it was Carrie's idea to turn it into, I think, a film first. And Carol was close to Hal, and Carol sent it to Hal Prince, and Hal said, this is a play, kid. And so they developed it into more of a sort of theatrical setting, which I think was a great idea. In the process of developing it into casting it, before we were set to go to the Goodman Theater in Chicago, Carrie got sick, had cancer, and then passed away right before we started production, maybe a couple months. And to be really honest, I thought, oh, it's not going to happen. Carol's not going to want to revisit this, and she's going to want to grieve and mourn. And let me tell you what, that did not happen. And she showed up every day to rehearsals in Chicago and then on Broadway, with such a collaborative spirit. I mean, I kind of can't say enough about her, because it's, I think, rare in a lifetime when you meet people who are idols, and then they actually exceed the expectations that you have about them, because we all project whatever our feelings are onto our idols that we see on television or we see on films for years and years. You know, we want them to be the heroes that we build them up to be. And goodness, she just exceeds every expectation across the board. Unbelievable. She is just the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman.
In your perception, because you were saying that you didn't think it was going to go on because she had passed away, do you think for some reason, because she very sadly, unfortunately, passed away, do you think that could be a reason why she could have been more motivated to have it, the show must go on kind of mentality? We have to do this for her.
That's 100% true. And Carol did actually say that. I need to do this for Carrie. I need to finish this. I need to follow through and work on it for her legacy and in her honor. So yes, in some ways, I do think that was a motivating factor.
I actually had read with Carol Burnett, and there was something about an article, because I think her 90th birthday, something along those lines. And it was about the opening night of the play. I don't know how vividly you would remember that, but she was saying it poured, rain, like downpour and all this stuff. And then she was saying that her and Carrie were both nuts about the rain. So it was like Carrie was saying hello. I don't know if you could recall any of that. The rain,
you know,
that
I do remember that. And Carol has 100% changed my perception of rain now. I do remember it pouring. And I do remember her saying that this was such a good omen. This was, it's good luck. This is good luck. This is always such a, that Carrie was present and felt a part of us. So anytime it rains on special events, it always makes me happier in some way.
Really?
So I do remember that story.
That's so interesting. Now, I kind of wanted, because we're taping this from New York, and obviously the theater and Broadway, the performing arts, have a lot of buzz in this town. I wanted to ask Lydia, where you are, is there like a big performing arts community kind of thing? Is there a lot of theater over there? What's the deal over there?
On this side, yes, we do actually. We have the Baxter Theater. That is where most of our dramas and plays, that is where everybody wants to go and perform at Baxter Theater. That one, and as well as, I'm trying to think if it's still opened. I forgot about it, but it's somewhere around here in town. The last time I heard, they were renovating it, but I'll get back to you with the name. But the biggest one here, it's Baxter Theater.
Very nice, very nice. Because we were talking about your, Michelle, your theatrical career, and I believe it was in my research, correct me if I'm wrong, it's about 2010, 2011, you added professor to your resume. Is this true over at Wagner College? Is it around then?
Yes, because I think I'm in my 14th year right now. So, yes.
Now, here where we are at school, we have people like Andy and all kinds of great professors and mentors who have spent years and years and years and years in the field. So it's similar to that at Wagner, where you are, where you're a teacher in the theater department. How did that come about after all these years on Broadway and beyond?
Man, so lucky. That was sort of the universe lining everything up for me. I have to be really honest. I have a, I should say, my husband and I have a son who's now 24. But at the time, he was, you know, 14 or 12, right? And as you can imagine, a theater actor's life is going to work every night, going to work all weekends, going to work all holidays, you know, when everybody else in the real world rests, that's when theater artists go to work, right? Because that's when the rest of the audience can come to see us. Makes sense, right? So when my son started to go to school all day, and then I was gone all night and gone all weekend. And my husband is also an actor, as I mentioned earlier. And all of a sudden, I started to not enjoy my work away from my child. It got increasingly more difficult for me to be away. I just didn't want to. And I was literally complaining about it at an audition once. And a friend of mine, Randy Graff, a famous actress, who, you know, we're all auditioning for some part in a musical, and I'm complaining, and she's like, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I don't know. Maybe I want to teach, because I'd done some teaching, just kind of self-motivated on my own in the city, and had traveled around to different colleges and taught and directed, which I really enjoyed." And she literally volunteered. She said, "Well, I graduated from Wagner College, and they threw a degree at me, an honorary degree, and let me call them for you." So she literally put me in touch with someone at Wagner College, a former professor, the great John Jamiel. And he invited me out to do a master class. And then the current chair of the department, who is now a very good friend of mine, Dr. Felicia Ruff, she called me like, I don't know, a few months later and said, "Hey, listen, there is, I don't know if you're interested, but there's a full-time position opening up here. And I thought, well, I'll never get it, but this is probably a good opportunity for me to learn about the process of applying to be a college professor, because it's very different than anything I've ever done. So sure enough, I was like, oh, okay. And she kind of coached me and mentored me through it, because I didn't even really know what a CV was, a curriculum vitae, I think is how you say it. Anyway, so she kind of coached me through, and I ended up getting this job. And it has been the gift of gifts for many, on many levels. Yes, it allowed me to be at home with my boy, you know, while my husband was off kind of working at nights and weekends. But more importantly, it really allowed me to work with the students at Wagner College, who I have to say are like kind of a special breed. They just are very curious, and they have other interests, not just singing and dancing and acting. They care about the world. They care about politics. They care about history. They care about psychology. And so, and some of them were like chemistry minors, crazy, crazy. And so we've had such thoughtful conversations, and I've actually learned probably as much from them as I hope that they've learned from me over the course of these last, you know, however many years. So it's been a gift, really.
That's the old adage, they say. Oh, Lydia's good.
Okay. So it just like you mentioned, that you are working with the most, you know, these young students, they are open-minded and so engaging, and they want to learn more. Like, what is your experience? Like, can you share what excites you the most when it comes to working with these young actors?
Well, what a great question, Lydia, because as we all know, right, of course, which happens, right? The world has changed dramatically in the last 14 years, and our industry, the theater industry, the theater business, has also changed dramatically in the last, you know, 14 years, as it does, right? Things are on a curve. And, you know, now that the advent of social media and the way people get their news now, everything is so accessible and everything is so in the moment and present. That's also changed the way that we participate just in life, right? And learning how to access all of that and learning how to internalize all of it so that that students can use it for their work and their lives. I don't know if this is making any sense, but like sometimes the constant, and I think this is true for all of us, the constant barrage of information is very difficult to process, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier for me to turn my phone off because I didn't grow up with it. And I think it's much harder for younger generations to unplug a little bit just for our own sanity and our own health. And because what we do as actors, we have to use all of that information, but we also have to internalize it all, process it, make it our own somehow, digest it, and then bring forth our own point of view, our own perspective, what is that we have to say about it. I mean, in collaboration with a writing team, let's say. And that's been an interesting collaboration with my students over the course of the years. I felt like we've been in community and in constant conversation about how to do that and how to do it in a healthful way, like for themselves and for our community at large. Yeah, does that make sense? I'm not quite sure it does. Ask me if you need to, you want to ask questions about that, Lydia.
No, it actually makes a lot of sense. It does.
Hard, right? I think it's much harder generationally. And, you know, I can say this now because I'm an old bat. I think it's much harder for you all, younger folks, you know, who have so much information at your fingertips. I think it's harder in some ways.
It actually is hard because we end up not being able to live without our phones or our digitals. Like it's part of us, you know?
Agreed. And I also think it's hard to know, like, how am I supposed to process all that information? Or how am I supposed to, in the United States right now, how am I supposed to know what's true and what's not true? And where do I go to get actual facts? And then how am I supposed to feel about this? You know, and I think it's hard. And sometimes I find that it's a little bit numbing. And, so many Americans are like, I don't know what to do with it all. So I'm just going to like, tune out. I can't.
Yeah, that's true. Like we have too much information that we can take and we're just like, this is a lot. What am I doing with so much information?
I know. And in some ways, of course, it's great that we now know it and have access to it and are in the loop. But in some other ways, I think it's changed everybody and everything. We also, because now we have to learn how to cope with it all. We have to all have coping mechanisms and skills to protect ourselves. And then as artists, then we have to learn, okay, well, protecting myself is part of it. I have to know my boundaries, but I also have to know how to process it and how to use it, you know, for my work. So it's been an interesting collaboration in that way.
Amazing stuff. And, you know, you played a lot of like iconic roles in shows like Mamma Mia. Do you have a favorite role or one that particularly resonates with you?
I love that question. I get that, you know, of course, that's it's such a daunting question for me. And only because, you know, as people say, well, they're all my children and I love them all equally. No, I don't love them all equally, but so many projects are special to me for very different reasons, right? To be in the room with Carol Burnett and Hal Prince and Linda Lavin and Frank Wood, that, and then to be honored for that work I did in Hollywood Arms, that's special, right? But equally as special to work with Natasha Richardson and Alan Cumming and Ron Rifkin, right, in Cabaret, and I learn, and Dennis O'Hare, I learned so much about the kind of actor that I wanted to be from them, and the great Sam Mendes and Rob Marshall, right? I learned so much from them, and then I got to do an incredible play right before the pandemic with Will Arbery and Danya Taymor, and I learned so much from them and all the people that I was in the room with. And then I got to do Wicked with my husband, which was, you know, the gift of gifts. So they're all like, I so many of them are special. And Crazy for You and Susan Stroman and Mike Ockrent, and you know what I mean? So so many that are really special for me in many, many different ways. But there's a five or six highlights for me.
Oh, I love it. And like you just mentioned right now, like you've been working alongside legends, you know, like Harold Prince, as you mentioned. Like, what did you learn from these collaborations that you're now passing on to your students?
That's so great. I appreciate you saying that, because that's part of the gift of me being a practicing artist, like a teaching artist, I think is what they call it. I've been so lucky, right? After Hollywood Arms, I then got to go collaborate with Hal Prince and Steve Sondheim and John Wideman on a new Sondheim musical, which, you know, is now not new anymore. But what that was like to be in the room with greatness, you know, and I think of Lynn Ahrens and Steve Flaherty like that. So in some ways, in many ways, I will say I have taken little bits from everybody that I've worked with And I pass that information along all of the time. I always credit, but, you know, thinking about, you know, working with Steve and Hal and John Weidman on Bounce was the Sondheim musical, which later became Roadshow. You know, these were men well into their established careers and legendary work, right? And they showed up every day with the collaborative spirit of, you know, 20-year-olds every day. And the energy, like, how do we play? How do we get it right? Okay, let's try this. Okay. And boy, I have taken that with me into every room I ever go in, right? Who doesn't want to work with people who just want to play and get it right, who tried to take the pressure out of the room and just focus on the actual work, you know? And I've thought about that all the way through. The more, and that's a hard thing to do, especially on Broadway, right? Because it becomes about money a little bit, and it's hard to not feel the pressure that all of a sudden, okay, well, we have 2 weeks and people are going to be in front of us and they're going to be judging us. And now, you know, because I'm old, I've had a career before social media and I've had a career after social media, and the advent of social media, you know, what that immediately, what the conversations that people are having, there used to be a day when people would allow you a process. People would allow you time to work on a show out of town without a critical eye on you. And now people, in the moment you have a first performance, people are judging. So when a lot of money is involved, you can imagine the stakes are a little bit higher. People start to feel the pressure in a different way. So in those larger rooms like that, to still feel creative and collaborative, man, the people at the tops of those producerial and directorial and choreographic elements, those creative team members, when they're able to keep the artists in check and on task about this is about the work, that's been a real gift to be in rooms like that. And I've tried to remember that when it's not, when it's sometimes not, you know.
And you know, like you just mentioned now, you know, being in Broadway, it's not easy, you know, having social talks where you look in the social media, people are starting to talk, and now you become afraid as an actor, you know, you're like, oh, am I going to perform well or whatnot? So as an actor, you know, what is the biggest challenges have you faced, and how have you like overcame them in the years?
Man, first of all, what great questions. First of all, I have learned over the course of my career to not participate in the conversation of the critical whatever. I don't do social media anymore. I don't read reviews. I don't. And that's been better just for me. Right. And so I try to, even now, as I'm, you know, almost 63, next month. Right. And I think about my own process, my own artistry, right? And I want to tap into that on whatever project that I'm working on. There's always something that I want to deepen. There's always something that I want to work on or focus on. And I've been working on a project this past summer, right? And there was something very specific that I wanted to work on and I felt very insecure about, right? And what a process that was to kind of go through that and live with that and think, okay, get out of your head, stop being critical about it, accept what it is, and just get better every day, 1% every day. Just get up and keep doing it and keep getting better and keep getting better. And because ultimately, I mean, sure, it matters, I guess, what the world says about it, But in the scheme of a lifetime, I think what really matters is what you do, is what you do for yourself, and how you share that and how you move through that. And sometimes how you move through challenges. Everybody's going to have them. We all have them in life, and we're all going to have them in our work, right? How do you move through them? How do you deal with them? And that's been, I'm in the process of one right now, and that's been, it's actually been a gift in some ways. That's the way I'm reframing it right now. I'm thinking, oh, wow, what an opportunity for me at this time in my life to be really challenged by something.
Well, you've put it in another different light now, a challenge as in like a gift. You know, this is the first time actually going through this, and you will pull through, you'll find a way. And that's the gift behind the challenge, right?
Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. I really believe it. Sometimes when you're in it, it's hard to see it. Do you know what I mean? You can be easily defeated, you know, by a bad day or a bad performance. And, oh, you know, I'm so worried about what people are going to say about me. So, yes, I do. I believe that, Lydia. I believe that, that it is a gift.
Amazing. And, you know, you've worked both theater and television. I'd like to know, is there a big difference between the both?
Yes. Yes, immensely. Mostly just about the not about the preparation or about the kind of work, but it's more about in the performance quality of the end result, right? If you're on stage, the way you share the information is a little bit different than the way you would share it if you know your face is 65. You know, feet tall and wide, right? There's a, the way you would share it would be much simpler, much more like through your eyes, not a lot of movement in your head. There becomes a little bit of a performance, a different performance quality to it. Man, I have such admiration for really good film and television actors. I have such admiration for them because they're so deep. Their work is so deep and so layered and complicated, and yet their performance style is so simple. And I always try to think about that for me, because that's been the kind of the, my backward process. I have to constantly remind myself, okay, what can you take away now? What can you take away now? What can you trust that will be there, that you don't have to tell people or you don't have to show people, you can just show up. So I have such admiration for really good television and film actors.
Michelle, what exactly do you teach at Wagner College? What exactly are the courses that you teach over there?
I largely, in addition to other things, which I'll tell you about, but I largely run the senior year at Wagner, what they call the capstone program, which is basically getting the theater performance majors ready to, as we say at Wagner, cross the river, because we're in Staten Island and across the Hudson River is New York City. So preparing them with monologues and audition materials, getting their books ready, their audition song books with their 16 and 32 bar cuts. And so mostly audition prep this semester and next semester. We focus on a showcase, a performance showcase that happens in New York City at a theater. And we invite industry professionals and my students will perform materials, scenes and songs, some duets, some solos, over the course of an hour, and some group material. So, and a lot of masterclass guests. You can imagine, because we're in, you know, New York City, and I have so many friends that are so eager. It's so nice that say, yeah, I want to come and I'll talk to your students. I want to come. And so it's been a really a gift to have some great, working professionals, directors, music directors, casting people, agents who can come and talk to our students, which has been a gift. I also teach a two different levels of a musical theater performance class, which is great, where we focus on, you know, all the stuff, the synthesis of the music and the lyrics and the storytelling of it. And then we focus on some styles in those classes, which is really important. And then I also have collaborated on a really fun kind of a history of kind of pop rock class, where we talk about the different styles of music and the performance qualities of them all the way through the 50s and the 60s, moving into the 70s and the folk rock era, and then the 80s and all the way up to contemporary. Because so much of contemporary musical theater right now, it really has contemporary scores, right? You know, Moulin Rouge, Me and Julie, or Juliet, Me and Juliet, right? Yeah. And so many of them. And if not, a lot of them focus on, you know, Rock of Ages was kind of an 80s musical. So it's important to know how to sing them.
No, please, you can continue.
Oh, no, no. I don't know. You go ahead. That was all.
Oh, no. I was just going to ask, are there any key qualities that you look for in a successful actor, especially in your students, knowing that they'll be going professionally with it?
Everybody's talented. I mean, nowadays, right? And if you, you know what I mean? If you burn to do this, to be an actor, then you obviously have some sort of talent, you know, along the way, right? But it's not the talent that is the thing that separates you. Sometimes it is, you know, and sometimes, you know, that's great. But it's actually the work that you are willing to put in. And so no matter what your gift is, no matter what your area of expertise is, let's say it's chemistry, right? There's also a certain amount of work that you have to put in. And if you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work, but there will be always certain parts of your business, your craft, your journey that are harder for you than others, right? And it's the people who want to put in the work on the aspect of their artistry that they're less good at. Everybody, you know, everybody's really good at one thing, let's say, right? But maybe not so good at the other. Really work at the thing you're not good at, right? Remain open and curious about that particular aspect of it. And when other things come in, you know, again, you know, as I said earlier, but stay open to them. You know, very often it's one of the things I love about Wagner. Love is that our students are curious, as I said, and very often they'll be juniors or seniors and they will say, oh my gosh, I got to direct, you know, a piece in my directing class. And I really realized that might be what I'm supposed to do, or I've started writing. And to have the ability, which is a gift at that particular school, to say, yes, let's nurture that. Yes, you have to also do what you have to do, you know, to finish your degree, which we all have to do. But yes, let's dive into the writing and let's write. I had two students in my last year's performance class. One is in a touring graduate degree programs, one for writing and one for sound design and one for musical theater writing. And so, you know, stay open to that and creative. I also feel like, pardon me, the more that we know how to do and learn how to do in this industry and in this business, the more it serves us. I mean, look at all the people that come out and have formed theater companies, right? People that went to college together and now they have a theater company, or the people that have come out of school and said, oh, I can write my, I want to write my own piece and I'm going to star in it and I'm going to produce it. Yeah. What an honor, what a gift to be able to have, you know, practice that while you were in college, you know, because as I say to my students at Wagner, it's much cheaper to do it while you're in college. It's not free because you're paying for college too, but you don't have to rent the spaces, you don't have to hire, you know what I mean? Then once you graduate, you have to pay for everybody's time in a way. And I will say the faculty at Wagner, and I'm sure this is true at a lot of colleges, they want to help you. They want to collaborate. You want to talk about your piece? Yeah, come into my office and let's, you want to get a piece up? I'll come watch it. You know what I mean? So, did that answer the question? I don't even actually, Lydia, remember what the question was or who answered. I don't even know what am I? It's too early. I haven't had enough coffee.
No, you no, you answered the question perfectly because, as you mentioned, and you know, we look at the theater and we're like, oh, we all want to be actors, but you know, when you go deep down in it, there's script writing, there's editing, there's this, there's that. You know, it becomes bigger, and you find your space, and you're like, you know what? This is for me. I am a writer. I am, you know, but you're still in one under one umbrella. You're in theater.
Oh, that's so great because there are millions of jobs in the theater, right? There's, and they're just as creative. There's company management that has a little more of an arts administration bent, but it's also creative. You're with the actors every day, right? There's stage management. There's designing. I have a performance student that is now a Tony Award-winning designer. For Water for Elephants, he and his partner, his business partner, created all the puppets, right? How creative is that? I have a student who's now a costume designer for several off-Broadway shows. So you're right. There are many jobs, even agents and casting directors. It's very creative.
We mentioned before about your career, about how you've worked in this business a long time, so you're seeing things out of your students. What would you say seeing them? Because you said before you refer to yourself as quote an old bat. So what would you say? We have to be journalistic and do the quotes, but what would you say gives you the most hope looking at the future of the performing arts and the theater when you see your students? And even the future of the world, because you were saying about chemistry and things of that nature.
But you know, the first thing that can I when this is just me, right, Richard, but when I get asked questions like that, I will tend to focus on the first thing that came to my mind. And you know what came to my mind when you mentioned my students in particular? Yes, they're talented. Yes, they're gifted. Yes, they work. But you know what? Above all, they're kind. They take care of one another. And they also have such grace. They've had such grace with me, you know, in particular. And I'm so grateful for that, and I feel like those qualities will be the things that will serve them even better than the talent and the work ethic. You know, knowing that, yeah, to be honest, this business sucks sometimes. It actually really sucks. Sometimes it's very hard. You know, for every 100 auditions, you get one job. Maybe. And sometimes it's 150 auditions, right? How do you keep getting up every day? How do you not feel badly about yourself? How do you not take it personally, right? How do you not start to resent all of the other people who are getting those jobs that you're not, right? And it's those personal, central characteristics, right? The development of each person, the wholeness and wellness of each person that I think a lot of my students at Wagner are just really, really adept at. And they nurture one another, they take care of one another. And sure, they work hard, they don't get cast in something that they really wanted. They mourn it for a day and then they move on and they're happy for their friend. And that is going to serve them, I think, in the business. Much more so than some sort of cutthroat competitive, because we're not really in competition with anyone else. That's hard to believe sometimes because it feels that way, especially when you continually lose jobs to the same person over and over and over. But you're not. You're in it with yourself. And so when you can focus on your own journey and your own growth and take the other lens out of it, I feel like you're better served. And I feel like that's what my students, especially my seniors, you know, are learning how to do right now.
But I think what's kind of so beautiful about the answer that you just gave there is because you were saying with your friends and everything, you were auditioning with a friend, Randy Graff, and that's how you got your job at Wagner College. So it really does come all full circle about helping out each other and taking care of each other in this business. But I also like how you were saying during the course of our interview, in any business, how you were kind of bridging the gaps between all kinds of things during our conversation. Unfortunately, I do believe this is going to be the last question we get to ask you during the hour that we've spent together. Because we were talking about how, like, you were saying you were doing Wicked and, you know, stuff like that. And then you'd go in and teach the next day because you were balancing that out. What do you think is the biggest lesson you have been able to give to your students? And what do you think is the biggest lesson they've been able to give to you?
Yikes. That's loaded. How unfair. I mean, I've learned so much from them. And in some ways, they've helped me remain open. And they've also, in some ways, being a professor has made me, when I'm trying to reach a student or trying to help a student with their process and their progress, you know, and I'm not getting through in some way, I'm not reaching them. It's not their fault, right? They are where they are. And in some ways, that's been a real gift for me because it's encouraged me to just keep learning. I read books constantly. I just read a book about mindset it's encouraged me to keep growing. And that I'm forever grateful for because it's easy to forget that as you get older. When you feel like, well, I'm good. I mean, I know what it is, you know, it's good, it's fine. So I'm really grateful to them for that. And just their openness, they've really, that's changed me in a lot of ways, how just open they are. And, you know, they're all about love. That's a constant reminder, you know, even when I'm on the highway and I'm driving and sometimes I don't feel all about love. When someone wants to ram into me, but I'm trying to just remember everybody is where they are. That's what they've given me. I don't know what I've given them. I hope they see that I hope they see that through me, that it's a journey and there is no end result. You're never going to get to a place where you're like, now I know what it is. Now I've perfected it. It just doesn't work that way in this business, in this career, and I don't think in this lifetime either. So I hope they've learned that from me. You don't know, you'll have to ask them.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle, for joining us. We really do appreciate you taking the time.
It was so lovely to meet the both of you. I'm inspired by those questions, and I'm sure I'm gonna go back and think. Thank you so much. I am happy to be reaching across the globe. Really an honor for me. Thank you.
You are listening to One World Radio on 88.7 FM, WRIQ Radio, Hofstra University, and 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR Loudonville Siena College. 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Email, and it's Reed AI, the digital twin of LinkedIn co-founder Reed Hoffman, here on WRCT Pittsburgh. I'm here to tell you, you're about to tune into Possible, a show that sketches out what's possible if we use technology like AI and our collective effort effectively. Possible is hosted